Welcome to the House of Brick Partner Podcast. I am Bob Lindquist. The intent of this podcast is to share, educate, and advise listeners on best practices for business-critical database platforms and related technologies. Today, we are joined by Vance Creer and Matt Good from our partner, Advanced Network Management. We also have Mike Stone, Chief Oracle Architect, and one of the founders of House of Brick Technologies. Thank you all for joining me today.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Yep.
So just to set the table, House of Brick has been partnering with A&M. I think it's going on 8 years across various industries. I actually did a count. We've worked with airlines, clients. We've worked with financial institutions, a lot of state and local and others. I think because A&M brings such great expertise, not just in the data center and on-premise options, but you know, really that cloud focus, including security and other areas. You know, House of Brick is a database platform expert. And I guess my question, maybe starting with you, Vance, is, you know, how is A&M specifically helping your customers with cloud? And why are you partnering with House of Brick?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. So I would say from a customer perspective, we're helping in a number of ways. We've historically been for 20 plus years have been a full service IT consulting company, helping with, you know, on-premise architectures, data center, network, et cetera. And, you know, as IT has evolved and we've moved a little bit more, you know, cloud centric and helping customers with applications and whatnot, a lot of, if I were to boil it down, what our customers are coming to us today for is helping to understand, you know, what are their options, right? How do I evaluate my existing solutions on premises, perhaps, for cloud readiness? Like, what are the use cases that make sense for me to move to the cloud? Whether it's talking about a backup and recovery, maybe I'm doing a data center evacuation due to whatever reason, I got to get out of a building, or maybe I'm relocating some, you know, headquarters or whatever. Or am I looking at potential ways of optimizing my solutions, right? Optimizing my applications, optimizing my databases, you know, essentially trying to take advantage of, you know, all the advantages of the cloud, where I can essentially, you know, basically refactor my applications, take advantage of these microservices, and, you know, scale out linearly whatever I'm trying to do. As it relates to databases specifically, as you mentioned, we've had a great relationship for 7 or 8 years, and you guys have always been a phenomenal partner to come in and help our customers solve whatever the database challenge it is, whether it's SQL or Oracle or doing Oracle license defenses or managed, you know, helping our customers manage their environments. You've been phenomenal. And as you've grown your business and expanded into the cloud, it's been a natural progression for us. So anytime we have an opportunity where a customer is talking database, we know that, you know, we immediately talk about House of Brick. And we immediately, the very next thing we do is we call Bob and set up a call with that customer. And we've had some great success.
Well, I appreciate that. And just to be clear, I don't believe I paid you for that endorsement, but
not yet. It'll be sent in the bill.
Okay. And Matt, and you know, you're probably one of the top people at A&M focused on cloud. What are the specific options? And the reason I'm asking, you know, I did a count on AWS services. There are almost 300 or more types of cloud services that AWS provides. How do you, in your role, help A&M customers with their cloud options?
Sure, that's another good question, Bob. What we do here is we kind of take a look at what they have going on premise, what their requirements are. A lot of people have cloud initiatives. A lot of people don't know they have cloud initiatives until they've talked to some of their C-level folks. So we come in and look at what they do, kind of match up what they do on premise into an AWS service or five, depending on how that plays out. So looking at things like hybrid connectivity with transit gateway or just standard AWS VPNs, all the way to, you know, AWS SSO single sign-on to be able to integrate with current authentication platforms they have on their premise. We run the gamut, right? All of the architecture and design work we do, we base on AWS as well, architected framework.
Great.
And make sure that we deploy all of the appropriate, you know, VPCs and gather all of the required information. So if there's a challenge, they can troubleshoot it. If there's an audit, they can provide defense and get them to the cloud as fast as they want to move.
That's great. And, you know, the value of the partnership like we have with you is, we don't have to worry about that for the customer. You provide that expertise. You help them know what's real. You help them know maybe what they don't know, and help give them those options. And then as the question I'll ask Mike about here, you know, we're going to be providing, as an extension of your team, some of those database platform capabilities that maybe isn't the focus of A&M, right? So I think now taking over to you, Mike, is, you know, from a House of Brick perspective, what have you seen our primary role in helping clients be, you know, helping clients with cloud relative to what an A&M might do for them?
Well, I think A&M brings a lot to the table in terms of tracking down those details, helping put a good plan in place. Where we come in then is partnering, working with the customer to help run a pilot. All right, here's how the books say it works. Here's all the details that we put together. Here's our plan. Let's show you. And House of Brick can come in. We can demonstrate that. We can work through the difficulties and, you know, let the customer get hands-on, kick the tires, give it a try, and then work with A&M to finally push that through to a full production implementation.
So we'd work together with A&M to help the customer with that pilot. It could be whether it's in an A&M lab or on the customer site in this remote world we live in, but in their data center and or a cloud sandbox, we can help with those types of things is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. So, you know, helping understand options, number one, helping them know what they don't know with all the options they have, and then helping them try before they actually do. I think those are all good things where our partnership's bringing value. So let me kind of talk more about the cloud providers themselves. I know in partnering with AWS over the years, the big focus has been on lift and shift and just evacuate your data center, including your business critical systems, the database platforms, just lift that and move it all up into the cloud. You know, Matt, back to you. How easy is it really to just lift and shift the data center just as is? Is that the right way? Is it the easy way? Is there an easy button? What have you seen?
Yeah, it's not always easy, number one, and it's not always right, number two. Lift and shift is with the evolution of things like VMware Cloud and AWS, lift and shift has become more palatable with customers because they're moving their VMDK files from on-premise to cloud and they stay kind of in their format. The management stays the same. Lift and shift to a native AWS type of service where you're going from VMDK or HVM, the Hyper-V file extension to an EC2 instance sometimes takes a little more time because you actually got to rebuild and reinstall the application, reconnect all the pieces and parts and kind of make it work in the AWS world. So
it's, you know, not just going into vCenter and doing a vMotion is what I'm hearing you say.
No, sir. There's a little bit of latency when you're not really going to vMotion a VM from on-premise to cloud. You're going to, you know, redeploy for the most part. So,
yeah. And Vance, what have you seen so far in terms of lift and shift? Are these things that happen over months or years? Can it happen quicker? What have you seen?
We've seen the gamut, right? So like Matt was saying, there are instances where you may take a solution like a VMC where I've got to do something very rapidly, stand up an environment, push a whole bunch of virtual machines into the cloud. It's a great solution for that. I think most of our customers though are taking a more measured approach where they're taking a look at their applications or taking a look at their use cases and, you know, being thoughtful about what needs to move to the cloud, what's the best bang for their buck in terms of the cloud. There are instances where it makes a lot of sense to do a complete lift and shift to the cloud. And depending on the size of the environment and the complexity, it may be even more cost effective to do that. We find for most customers, there is potentially a hybrid model that makes a little more sense. There are situations where you really need to take advantage of those cloud native services in order to get the best bang for your buck. And that may entail leaving some portion of your environment, either, you know, in an on-premises data center or potentially moving it to another IaaS player or potentially a colo, and really taking a look at the AWS world and the clouds in general for what they're best for, right? For how they're going to help that customer move forward. So we come in, we kind of help them think through their use cases, figure out what is the primary motivation for looking at the cloud, figure out how how can they get the best bang for their buck based on whatever their business objective is. And then we help kind of guide them through that process.
So to reiterate here, lift and shift isn't always easy or the right option, but more importantly, going back to kind of eating the elephant, right? A cloud migration may be more appropriately done eating the elephant one piece at a time rather than trying to U-Haul an elephant, right? You got to make sure what's your motivation, what is your strategy. And I know we have a client that we're helping right now where they have a lot of proprietary hardware. In fact, Exadata's from Oracle, where without going to all the detail, it's going to take us anywhere from 6 to 9 months to get most of those workloads up and optimized and ensure they're properly licensed. But then we're going to help them after that in another 12 to 18 months to move to Postgres. And the interesting part there is kind of going back to what you said, Vance, about what is the end goal? What is the objective here? Their objective is to unwind Oracle, but you just can't get off Oracle in a month. There's a lot of complexities, and it really comes down to, I think, you know, one thing that maybe is the elephant in the room or on this podcast is it's all about the application, right? The application is going to determine how much, how fast can be done. Can it be refactored? Is it off the shelf? Is it homegrown? Do those people, are they still around from this 30-year-old app? You know, how can you refactor? You have to move to something else. Is SaaS a better solution? You know, these are all the things that I think we can help our clients talk through. So speaking of one of our clients, Mike, you know, we recently helped the state of New Mexico and the Educational Retirement Board. They had ODAs rather than Exadatas, if I recall, and we have a case study that we did with AWS on this. We'll provide the link with the podcast. But Mike, you know, they had ODAs they had to get because of an audit, as I recall. They had, you know, probably more licensing, more horsepower than they needed. They were just trying to get through the life of the ODAs and look at the other options. From your perspective, moving off the ODAs to AWS, what was the compelling reason for ERB to do that?
Well, one of the big compelling reasons was the relationship with Oracle. We actually went to RDS license included, and so now they're no longer at risk of audit. It's AWS's responsibility to make sure that they have license to run Oracle. And they really only had Oracle for one particular application, and that was the main application that drives their business. And so no other Oracle database is in-house. And the ODA was just massive overkill for that. In fact, most of the resources were disabled in order to make the licensing affordable. And so, we just had this, you know, this solution in the ODA that was massive overkill. And so getting off of that, getting onto more modern hardware, getting the licensing risk reduced by removing the threat of an audit, those were the big motivators.
Yeah, I know that Lawrence, the CIO, was very pleased on really how simple it was to use the AWS services and get the workloads moved. But Matt, as you and I know, what may seem simple doesn't mean that it is easy, that there aren't hurdles. What were some of the challenges at ERB that you recall, if any?
Yeah, I mean, it was an entirely different platform than they're used to. So things like just standard logging in and navigating to where they can see their workloads, their resources, see what the logging, see what's happening from a logging perspective, if there's troubleshooting. It took a little bit of time to get them used to the new interface and how to find things that they were used to finding in minutes, you know, maybe took a little bit longer initially.
Until they got comfortable.
With them. Yep. We spent some time with them and showed them around. And yeah, I think they picked it up pretty quickly and they're up and running now. So
yeah, I'd liken it to, and Mike, you were here, you know, I think I've been at House of Brick going on nine, almost 10 years, and you've been here since the beginning. But similarly, Oracle DBAs running on-prem, physical servers introduced VMware, that was new, but it was better. And once the Oracle DBAs got familiar with VMware and were comfortable, it got easier. I think, Matt, what I'm hearing you say is very similar. These DBAs and sysadmins may not be familiar with the cloud and the console and, you know, IT as software, but once they do, it becomes even easier than they expected. Would that be fair?
That's fair.
Great. Well, Vance, you know, lots of customers like ERB out there. From what you saw, I know Mike talked about, you know, unwinding them off Oracle, getting them on an easier platform, mentoring them on there. ERB's use case, how would it apply to other A&M customers or prospects out there?
Yeah, I would say that it's pretty similar. Like a lot of our customers have their existing processes, have their existing workflows. All customers generally have the applications, back to what you said earlier, where the use cases generally revolve around either DR, backup and recovery, or some sort of application that they're trying to move. And so a lot of the kind of early assessment services that we are engaging with customers on is figuring out what does it look like to move one of these applications? What does it look like kind of across the board, not just for how the application functions, but what are the dependencies? Do you know what the dependencies are? How do you discover what they are? And then once you've moved the application, how does it change your job? How does it change, the day in the life of the admin in order to continue to manage the infrastructure around that application as well as the application itself? So it's an entire life cycle, I think. Like anything in IT, it's constantly changing. And so the good thing about our customers and the people who've been doing this a long time is you can't spend much time in IT without being adaptable. And so this is just kind of the next evolution of that.
Yeah. So maybe not always cookie cutter. So, ERB was on ODAs. ODA customers could do that. But maybe if the customer's on something else, it might be customized based on what their life cycle is. So I'm going to kind of flip the script here on you, Vance. So I'm usually the host here. So I'm going to ask you, since ERB was actually my client, what questions might you have of me?
Well, obviously, we talked about ERB specifically. I guess I would ask, we engage with you guys. I know the use cases where you guys have provided tremendous value to us and our customers. I'm curious from your perspective, what other services, what are you seeing as kind of the biggest need for your services kind of in the broader customers? You talked about Oracle, but like where are you getting the most use cases or help feel like you're bringing the best value to your customers?
Yeah. And let me see if I can couch that in a slightly different way. So we provide services based on what our clients need around the database platform, whether it's on-prem or cloud. And I would say the greatest needs we are seeing, first, I would say licensing. At AWS knows this, as do you, that one of our superpowers is to help the Oracle customer understand their licensing options relative to their deployment options. And one of the services that we have available is a managed compliance service. This is a very great service for clients who are looking to stay on Oracle, or as we were talking about, sometimes there are Oracle customers who want to unwind from Oracle. That managed service uses some of our Ops Compass tool set, including our license manager, to be able to understand how are they deployed, how are they entitled? Where are the compliance gaps? And what do they need to do to maintain that compliance, not in case of audit, but when they do get an audit, right? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I can vouch for the fact that we've had tremendous success with you guys. You've done a great job of coming in and helping customers understand what they have. In a lot of cases, better in a better way than the vendor. You're their advocate. You're helping to consult with them, whether it is they want to get off of it or they just want to know that they're getting a fair shake, in that conversation. Right. And we spent a lot of time talking about Oracle today, but I'm curious, how does this apply to other database platforms, Microsoft,
right,
et cetera?
In fact, while you were saying that, I was thinking about the client there in Denver we're using to look at some database services and data warehouse models for Azure and using the SQL Server database. So, the way that we look at Oracle and SQL Server, and I'll ask Mike to jump in here as well, is we started House of Brick as an Oracle database consulting firm, really because we wanted to optimize and make it the most performant, and we felt it was probably the best enterprise class relational database. I would think, Mike, if you agree, Microsoft then took SQL Server, over the last 10 to 15 years? And I don't know that they've caught up with Oracle, but SQL Server, we're seeing it more and more clients for business critical workloads. It's become more enterprise class. Your thoughts?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oracle still does a lot of great things, not to disparage the product by any means, but Microsoft is a solid contender for 90% of the workloads or more. Postgres is also a good open source option. So people do have options.
Yeah.
And more and more we're getting asked that question and put together projects and assessments of what is it going to take to move my workload to one of these alternative platforms.
Yeah. And while we certainly respect and welcome our AWS partnership, probably 90 to 95% of the time with our clients, we do get those cases, Vance, like your customer there in Denver, where they're just a SQL Server shop and Azure makes sense. We don't see Oracle on Azure much, if at all. We've helped a few clients there, but usually, AWS is a great platform. And sometimes Oracle Cloud seems to be of interest to them, but sometimes we may talk them out of going from Oracle Cloud. Mike touched on something though, maybe to the other part of that question is the dimension of open source. And so we talked about lift and shift. We've talked a little about, move to manage like at ERB where they went to RDS with license included and no more Oracle relationship. Modernization is going to be an interesting space because most of the customers that are, we just talked earlier this week, Mike and I, with a startup that isn't going to have a data center, right? Yeah. They're just going to start up in the cloud. Matt, you're shaking your head, right? That why, if you are starting up a new business, would you look at buying hardware? Why wouldn't you look at SaaS or if your application required it, looking at PaaS or maybe infrastructure as a service? So I think Postgres, MySQL, and there are a lot of other databases depending on your use case out there. I think that's where House of Brick is going to help the microservices model. And Matt, you tell me if you agree, but having all the services where IT is software, instead of worrying about the server thing, the storage thing, they all become services that you can leverage. Are you seeing a similar kind of modernization approach?
A lot of customers want to get out of the data center business now because it's a lot of work for not a lot of benefit, and it's a lot of cost. And so being able to turn a server or a storage platform into a service in a cloud that you don't have to manage any of the underlying infrastructure on makes a lot of sense for customers. That gives them the ability to focus on what keeps the lights on for their business and not focus on, I got to replace a hard drive or a power supply failed. When can I get, how do I get a new one? Or I have a water leak in my chiller. How can I get someone out to fix it? Right.
Right.
They can focus on developing new services, go to market faster with, updates to their current services and leverage automation to do a lot of it because, you really can't automate the hard drive replacement very easily right now.
Yeah. And, Vance, back to your question, I think the biggest superpower that both House of Brick and A&M can bring to our respective and joint clients is options. I think we said it at the beginning, in the middle, and here at the end is, the value we can bring is to, instead of the vendor telling the customer they can only do it one way, we can give them options, whether it's, for their licensing, whether it's to properly size and optimize, or as we're saying here at the end, modernizing. We're going to see a lot of customers wanting to unwind from their proprietary databases, depending on their application, right? We're going to see customers getting more comfortable with cloud who may have just been in data centers for 20 or 30 years. But I think the real space here in Vance, I'll let you ask me one last question, but modernization, this pandemic has really caused the, digitalization of IT to progress, 5 years faster than expected? And cloud's been a big part. Would you agree?
I would agree. Yeah, absolutely. The pace of innovation, the pace of development, and really back to your point where you mentioned, if you were building a business today, if I were building a business today, I don't know that I would have, even though I've got all the skills and all the experience,
right,
and I've been doing this for a long, long time, I couldn't see a use case for building that on-prem, right? My phone system would be in the cloud, my email's in the cloud, my files are in the cloud. Certainly my applications are going to be developed there. So it makes a whole lot of sense for anything new that's being created now to be born in the cloud, developed entirely. And so now it's just really circling back to all of those existing customers that have a lot of legacy apps and helping them, you know, go through the digital transformation process. Like you mentioned, there are applications and use cases where stuff may migrate to SaaS. There's stuff where you may have an application where it makes sense to either refactor it or move it to a cloud service. And then, of course, helping with what's left over, right? All the things that need to stay kind of in that traditional VM format. And maybe it makes sense to shift that last remaining bit to the cloud, or maybe it makes sense to find an alternate solution. The one thing that I like to say, and I've said this forever, is that, you know, as consultants, we come with our tool bag of options, and the reality is there's a whole lot of right ways to do things.
Yeah.
And so our job is to essentially help customers find the best right way for them.
Yeah, and I think customers need to recognize, and I was reading an article earlier this week about a lot of the vendors out there talking about the models that customers are adopting and that partners like us are moving to. I just liken it to, I didn't build my wife a data center here in the house. I just pay for iCloud every month, right? And I think a lot of those customers are going to start taking that same model at work and starting to do the same. Well, in closing, appreciate all your help as a partner over the years. I think we've seen here today that customers have options with cloud. They can look at moving off of Oracle, whether like ERB, just getting out of the relationship, but their application keeps them on Oracle for now, or just maybe help them be open to the options of modernizing. There are a lot of things there. So Vance, Matt, we appreciate House of Bricks' partnership with A&M. Appreciate your joining us here today.
Likewise, Bob. It's been great. Thanks, appreciate it. And looking forward to what comes next.
Thanks. And Mike, you and I have worked together going on 10 years. So I would just say this. It's professionals like you that drew me to House of Brick in the first place. So appreciate partnering with you every day. Thanks for being here today.
Likewise, Bob, we appreciate the professionalism, and it was a pleasure.
We've come to the end of the House of Brick Partner Podcast. For more information on this and other topics, please visit houseofbrick.com. Thanks for listening.